This is Logan Seculo. A new loophole is exposed for RFK Jr. to qualify for the CNN debate stage.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
This is Logan Seculo. Later on, I'll be joined by Mike Pompeo. We got Will Haynes as well, executive producer here in studio, and lawyer, ACLJ attorney Ben Sisney will be joining us later in the broadcast, talk about some ACLJ work. But what we wanted to start off with was the update that after the big debate news yesterday, where you would see a head-to-head Trump v. Biden, one-on-one, there could not be another third party. Now, all of a sudden, due to some major changes, and Will and I actually have a very interesting story to share about that, RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is claiming, at least, he has not only a path to qualify, but has or will qualify by that day.
That's right. So as we told you yesterday, the Biden campaign, when they sent that letter to the Commission on Presidential Debates, they made it very clear that they said it should only be candidates that statistically have a viable path to the presidency. So a lot of what they were leaning on is, one, the poll numbers, but also that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. didn't have ballot access in enough states to really qualify to reach a number of 270 electoral college votes to win. So after that announcement, it was kind of like, okay, well, they're keeping him out of the debate. We get that. And they use very clever terms about statistically viable, things of that. Well, the Kennedy campaign then came back and said, look, we think that we could qualify for the CNN debate because CNN has a 15% threshold in four national polls. I think they could get there. Polls are also easily manipulated for those purposes, so they could probably get there.
Yeah.
But also, they announced last night that his running mate, Nicole Shanahan, was putting $8 million more dollars into the campaign additional ballot access, which they will get over that 270 threshold hump of potential electoral college votes, which would then in that case theoretically make them a statistically viable candidate, and they would then be putting the ball in CNN's court and say, hey, keep us out, we're following your rules, we're here, put us on stage, even though CNN and Team Biden say no, we don't want that.
Yeah, Will and I have a lot to say about this, because last night, I'm going to be upfront and clear, we were invited press. We do not endorse a candidate. We did not make a political donation. We were invited press to a Robert F. Kennedy event last night here in Nashville, Tennessee. It was interesting, to say the least. We sat there as stoically as we could, laughing at some of the comedians. It was a night of comedy. But man, we got some stuff to share from this event. It was a little eye-opening to what an RFK run really looks like. And look, I'm someone who was going in, I'm as press, as media, you try to go in and say, okay, read the room. How are things progressing? We're going to discuss that in the next segment, what that was like to be in this packed auditorium in the historic Ryman Auditorium, my favorite venue in the world, and what it was like at this particular political event. And it was unlike anything I've ever seen before. And I said in an X post, and Will and I went to an event once where Mitt Romney had to speak around a bunch of caged dogs. Okay?
True story.
We went to an event where that was the setting. So we've seen some weird political events, but this one may have taken the cake. I will get that to you in the next segment. I'm going to encourage you real quick. Tomorrow's show, it's a bit of a Q&A episode. We're going to do some really special segments we've never done before where you ask the questions that we answer, and you ask those questions through YouTube or through Rumble or through Facebook. If you're watching any of those, all you have to do is start your comment with Friday. Put that Friday in big caps. And we are going to pull as many of those comments and questions as we can. And tomorrow's show, we're going to answer those questions. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. So think about it. Any of the topics we talk about here at the ACLJ, any of the topics you hear about on Seculo, whether it's what you hear about today, what you've heard about earlier this week, put that in there, and we're going to pull some of the best ones we see. Our social media team is keeping an eye out for that. I'm going to keep promoting that because we're going to have a really special show tomorrow where, again, I've always said you are the most important voice. You may hear from people like Mike Pompeo coming up in a segment. You may hear from some of our top ACLJ attorneys later on. You may hear the incredible guests we've had on this week. Yeah, Sean Spicer and so on. But who is the most important voice? It's you, and I want to hear from you. So get those questions in. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Secula. We are discussing that loophole that may have come up that would qualify RFK to join the debates. Now, Will and I last night had the opportunity as members of the press to attend an RFK night of comedy at the historic Ryman Auditorium. This featured some of the biggest names in comedy. I mean, look, you may like them or not like them. It's just the truth. Headliners were Russell Brand. Okay, that is who headlined the night. You had Jim Brewer, whose friend was on Jingle Smells. You may remember him back from then from SNL. You had Rob Schneider. You had Steve Byrne. Incredible night of comedians. You also had some great music acts. Now, here's the part where I was going to tell you that it was one of the strangest experiences I've had in a political event. It was a night of comedy. But it still, at the end of the day, was a political event to try to sway, you would assume, sway voters, to sway people to vote for Kennedy. Now, were Russell Brand, obviously our friend Jim Brewer was great, Steve Byrne was great, Rob Schneider was good. Were they funny? Sure, they were funny. And some people like Jim are fairly clean, I've been to a lot of comedy shows in my life. This was the dirtiest comedy show I've ever been to, and it was a political fundraising event that put a weird taste in my mouth, especially because you looked around and yes, majority were adults, but I think a lot of people brought kids, thought that this was a political event. There's nowhere where it said this is going to be an 18 and up, 21 and up style show. And every word was used. A lot of slurs were used. There was a lot of things thrown around. And look, I'm no prude and I'm no prude to comedy, but from someone who analyzes politics, it's a weird decision to have these top level comedians, and some of them not, some of the ones I'd say that actually were the bluest of them, if you will, were the ones who you did not know, who were standing in front of giant Kennedy Shanahan letters.
Right. And also, so much to that point, even later in the night, when you had Russell Brand doing his very eloquent, if you watch him on Rumble, you know that he's very good with words, he's witty, he's clever.
Oh yeah.
But he made a joke that was fairly off color, pretty dirty, and then he heard someone's baby in the audience, and he said, "No one told me there would be babies here. I wouldn't have just said what I said."
Yeah.
And meanwhile, it felt like a PR nightmare for a campaign manager of having this event that all of the optics, press were invited.
Yeah.
And it was the least polished show you'd want your presidential name attached to.
Yes. And here's the crazy part. Okay, this is when it went a little off the rails and I can actually sympathize a little with RFK. He goes up, so he's very late. They tell us very early, before the show starts, they say, hey, he has had a family medical emergency. His nephew, who has a lot of special needs, a lot of issues, had a medical emergency in Florida. He is down there. He is going to make it, but it's going to be a late night. So, you know, we got there at 6. Kennedy doesn't hit the stage till well after 10, close to 11. I mean, even
he
after
took
11.
The stage at 11.
At 11 o'clock at night. He goes up. He makes his speech, and you'd think you'd get like a political speech. And what we got was a few minutes telling you why he was late, which was understood. Everyone said a prayer, by the way, for this kid at the beginning. It was pretty emotionally moving moment at the beginning. It was pretty cool. And then he thanked the comedians. And then did he go to policy? Did he start talking about why you should be voting for him? No. He decided to tell a dirty joke that he said his wife would not allow him to say, but she wasn't here, so he was going to say it. And it ended with pretty explicit language. And then said, thank you, good night. It was so strange. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen in terms of politics. Again, no disrespect to the comedians that were involved. I think the comedians, a lot of them, had great acts, very funny stuff. There were some jokes we've been already repeating because they were some really funny stuff. So I'm not throwing shade. I'm not even throwing shade at people who are supportive of RFK. But as someone who went in trying to be open-minded, it did not sway me. What it also did was illuminate something that maybe in the red states we need to be aware of, which was when a joke was against President Biden, which was the majority, as you'd expect, the laughs were gigantic. When the jokes were aimed at President Trump, they were very mild. They were, I'd say maybe it was a 10% of the audience laughing, 20% of the audience laughing, which also said to me, these people that all came to this event, most of them were potential Trump voters, not the other way around. They were Trump voters who were interested in what Kennedy had to say. Instead, they got a very different night. Now, I think Will and I probably walked away with very different points of view than most of the people there. I think people had a great time. They got to see A-list comedians. But here's the one part where I sympathize with him. A good portion of the video content they showed, and even Russell Brand, read off, you know, kind of quotes and headlines from different major news sources, the legacy media, as they say, about how crazy he is and how about how horrible of a campaign it is and all of these things and all the lies that they've spread about his campaign. And I'm like, that's pretty normal. That's what you do. So I get home last night. I'm like, well, it's 12:30 at night. My kids and my family are asleep, but I'm still wired from this bizarre evening. I was like, I want to see what's on social media. And I go to X and I just start searching for people that were talking about it. I wanted to see their reaction. And I came across a X post from a writer, and a writer from the Nashville Scene, which here is like a, you know,
it's an alt-weekly newspaper. Yeah. It has pop culture, local events.
You know, you get it in like, and for free.
They normally have a political section.
And they're usually very liberal. Okay, that's just, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. I pull up some of these posts and I can tell that RFK is right. They do lie about him. And they lie about him with no, with all mouth, no even caveat. I'll read you some of the things he said. Again, they're not even that egregious. You could have gone after a lot of the content that was said at this event. But instead, what they put on there was, presidential candidate RFK Jr. is a no-show 2 hours into his rally in Nashville. And then put that the press was notified he was going to no-show. And that the crowd was notified he was no-show. Did that happen? No. What happened was, before the event went on, they went on and said his special needs nephew had a medical emergency. He is going to make it, but it's going to be very late. Let's all pray for him. But the media spun it as he doesn't care about you. He's a no-show. He's crazy. Followed up with, it's true. Look, they were giving people time. You could tell they were stretching, waiting for him. But we were all a little forgiving, knowing the situation at hand. The venue, the Ryman Auditorium, this is from the same author, Eli from the Nashville Scene, or one of the writers from the Nashville Scene. And he put, the Ryman Auditorium has been on an intermission for almost a half an hour. Word is RFK Jr. is in Florida and Russell Brand never made the trip. I timed the intermission because they said it's going to be a 10-minute intermission. I texted my wife because I said, it's going to be a late night. We just took an intermission. 12 minutes later, Rob Schneider was on stage doing Burnin' Love by Elvis. 12 minutes later. That means, yes, it was a 10-minute intermission. Why lie about that? Who knows? Just to try to create chaos that isn't there. And then who takes the stage an hour later? I don't know, the person they said who never made the trip, Russell Brand. Russell Brand shows up live and in person. And look, we were all wondering, is Russell Brand going to come in from...
I expected it to be a video,
come in
honestly.
From London for this or from England? And he did. And he showed up and he did this event. Later on, did they fix that? No. The only thing they did was this morning... tweeted out, RFK showed up around 11. The intermission was not as long as the 30 minutes. My mistake. So here's the deal. You could actually go to that political event. You could have sat there the 7 hours we did, have real analysis on, do I think this was the right move for someone at RFK's stature right now to try to win over voters? And I just gave you a reason why I think there were some mistakes at that night. There was some fun stuff. Look, we're always honored to be invited as media. It's nice, but we're not going to lie to you. But instead of doing that, they decided to create a fake narrative to just discredit the guy when all they were honest. Up front, he is going to be late because here's why. It was absurd.
It was absurd, but it's not surprising, unfortunately, because that's how low the journalistic bar in this country has come. I have a master's in journalism. I love the art of journalism. I love the craft of journalism. I love truth. And unfortunately, in this country, we don't have that. We don't have a media that we can trust. You can't trust journalists to not just shove a narrative in your face. And that narrative they chose was that this is chaos and lies.
Right.
They didn't choose any of the litany of things that I could say, here's why maybe you shouldn't be supporting this candidacy. Bad PR. Crazy optics.
Never talked policy.
Yeah, never. It's like, I don't think this may... Maybe this is a setup campaign. But instead, they went with lies instead of just reporting what they saw.
Right.
And that's where it does strike a chord with people that support someone like RFK Jr. and many conservatives that have been dealing with this for decades, lies from the media about what they believe and who they are. And so they help him in a way, because instead of reporting on a chaotic event, they lie about it. And then people like us can tell you they're lying to you.
Yeah, and we have to expose that. We have to be part of that breaking of that legacy media. And the ACLJ is part of that. Sure, we have our legal cases in court. Sure, we're out there supporting what's going on in Israel and all that goes with that, from the smallest to the biggest lawsuits. But also, we have to take on and take down legacy media in ways that no one else will. You need to support the work of the ACLJ right now. I'm going to encourage you to become an ACLJ champion. That's someone who decides to be a monthly supporter of the organization. So go to aclj.org/champions. Over 21,000 have be the next one. Welcome back to Secular. We are now joined by Secretary Mike Pompeo, senior analysis here. And really, before I want to do that, I want to give you guys the what I want to tell you what we're doing tomorrow, which is we're going to be taking a lot of questions from you. And the way we're going to get those questions is right now. If you're on YouTube or Rumble, start your comment with Friday, you know, in big caps if you can. Friday. Do that right now. Ask a question. Our social media team is pulling those questions. And tomorrow's show, we're going to take a bunch of those. Kind of a ask us anything type of show. It's going to be a lot of fun. We are joined now by Mike Pompeo. Look, there seems to be a lot of confusion now in the Biden campaign as they seem to be flip-flopping on Israel once again. We obviously have seen what has been occurring, the weapons being withheld, that a speech saying, I support Israel, and then everything that's kind of unfolded since. But now there are reports that they intend to send $1 billion, the U.S., $1 billion in arms to Israel. So are they just reading the room? What are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I hope everyone will write in and ask your questions tomorrow. I will get on. I'll write all cap letters Friday, so you can have questions for me too. Look, the Biden administration wants it all ways. They don't want any accountability, any responsibility. So they are at the same time telling the pro-Hamas left wing of their party, hey, we're putting restraints on Israel. And then they're telling the vast majority of the American people, who understand that Israel needs the assistance to wipe out Hamas, who killed 1,000 of them, and who continue to hold Americans hostage, gosh, we're going to send $1 billion in arms sales. The truth is, this $1 billion, that's a joke when President Biden says this. This is going to be delivered over a couple of years. It will not be timely. The Biden administration has held up weapons that were ready to be delivered. And so this is essentially a three-card money for Israeli arms, and that's unfortunate. The United States should be full-throatedly helping Israel defeat Hamas, put pressure on Iran, and keep Americans safe and get our young men and women home as well.
Mr. Secretary, if you're Israel, what's the message you're getting from President Biden over these last few months, whether it be the forcing on hostage negotiations, whether it be don't go into Rafah, the bait and switch with these arms, as we've just discussed? How do you think the Israeli government and military leadership are feeling about the connection with the United States government at this point?
We don't have to guess. We know exactly. I've been there. I've heard from others. They no longer have confidence that when it really matters, when you hit the point of a maximum need, that the United States may or may not be there, depending on what happens in Dearborn, Michigan. And that's a little bit cynical, but not too much, because that's the reality of what the Israeli leadership is facing today. And so the message to them is not only we're not going to provide the operational and tactical support that you need, but we're not going to provide the moral support and political clarity that the world needs to see from the United States of America. When your Secretary of State, Secretary Blinken, says, gosh, if they go into Gaza, it'll be hard to tell the difference between them and Hamas, the Israelis and Hamas, that is off the rails. That is a fundamental misunderstanding of who the good actors here and who the evil actors are here. And it's also a message to the rest of the world. Be careful about partnering with the United States when it's led by President Biden, because no matter what they tell you in the good times at the fancy meetings and in the Georgetown salons, no matter what they tell you there, when you really need them, when the commitment that America has made is right in front of us, we may not be able to turn to the Biden administration to get what it is we need. And that is bad for our friends and allies and encourages our adversaries and those who want to undo the United States of America.
Secretary Pompeo, I mean, I agree with you. And it seems like we're creating new vocabulary, if you will, and you have a word now like Rafa, which I feel like is a word probably most people were not even utilizing. They've even heard of where that is. They don't know what it is. It's like the word Zionist. They, you know, they changed the meaning of it. All of a sudden it becomes a dirty word. The Biden administration seemed to say that a lot. They publicly oppose what's going on in Rafah and the Rafah invasion, if you will. But now, quietly, you know, sending more munitions and doing what needs to be done. Is this just another instance of, you know, coming up with sort of a boogeyman by using a word like Rafah and then quietly going, but we know what we have to do. Like you've said before, there are a lot of Democrats involved that know who is right and who is wrong in this, even if they can't physically say it.
Yeah, that may well be true in good measure. You're right about Rafah as sort of the boogeyman. I think that's true. By the way, we know what's going on in Rafah today. In Rafah today, Sinwar and his team of Hamas are planning another October 7th, working to find the political space to go do that. And so, there's a bunch of Democrats that are saying, just get me out of my domestic political fix, but let's try to do the right thing. I hope President Biden gets to that same place, at least that he does the right thing on the ground. But it's also important that we speak about this with clarity. And that's what's missing today. You have a Biden administration that would just assume this all go away. They don't have to think or work on it. They'd rather tell Israelis, no, be restrained, because they are hoping to make their way through the next months in preparation for a big election in November. And they can satisfy all the parts of their party so they can get a victory instead of just simply doing the right thing.
You brought up the election in November, and obviously we talk about all these foreign policy issues as they reflect on the way they're politically playing out here at home. And we saw this move by President Biden to challenge President Trump to a debate out of the blue after he's had rough weeks politically, whether it be decisions that are criticized that are not hard enough, or they're too soft, or you see the chaos on campuses. Do you think that the Biden administration and the campaign is feeling the fire of negative polls and disarray at home and need some sort of a Hail Mary here at this point?
Undoubtedly. I call it a Hail Joe, right? hoping like heck that they can trip the former President Trump up or have a great moment in a debate. I think that's undoubtedly the reason they've now said, yes, we'll go do this. We know that President Biden will struggle. We've seen him in speeches. He's not likely to be particularly successful. And most importantly, he doesn't have a narrative that can explain to the American people why it is they feel like their life is not as good as it was just 3 or 4 years ago. And that is not storytelling. That is not made up stuff. That's the reality of the life people are facing. And I'm confident that President Trump will lay out not only that case of what's happened to these past few years, but the things that he intends to do as he moves this country forward to get the nation back on the right track. And when he does that, the Hail Joe will have failed and America will be in a better place.
Thank you so much for joining us again, Secretary Pompeo. We always appreciate it. Again, I'm Kurt. You have no problem. Thank you for coming in. Your analysis is always incredible and we really appreciate that. And we can't do that. We can't have people like Secretary Pompeo on this show without your support. So I'm going to tell you right now, we are obviously witnessing attacks on our freedom, on the Constitution more than ever before. And in recent memory, definitely not in recent memory. Remember, we've already done some successful work in these situations. We already defeated the left's attempt to remove Trump from the ballot. We just sent, we're going to talk about this too, a letter to the U.S. Department of Education and the New York Department of Education urging Columbia to be held accountable for violations, protesters that were violating Jewish students' rights. We're going to discuss that coming up in the next segment with one of our ACLJ attorneys in the next half hour. So join us for that. I am going to encourage you right now to become an ACLJ champion. What that is, simply, it's someone who says, I'm going to support the work of the ACLJ, which includes this broadcast and all our legal work and everything you see from us, by becoming an ACLJ champion, by giving monthly on a recurring basis. So let's say that's $5. Great. $500. Amazing. Do at the level that you can, because it creates an amazing baseline for us to keep fighting these incredible fights, including things like fighting for young Christians that are wrongly imprisoned, including one of ours in Pakistan right now. So support this work. Give monthly, aclj.org/champions. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Right now, we got a few lines open. Get in line, 1-800-684-3110. Big second half hour coming up in just 1 minute. Give me a call, 1-800-684-3110.
Keeping you informed and engaged. now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. Second half hour coming for you right now. We're going to start with taking some phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. Will and I talked about the situation where RFK Jr. may qualify for the debate stage. We also talked about our review of his event last night. I wanted to clarify for those that are watching. Again, we were invited press. We would not give a political donation. We did not endorse any candidate. We sat there with the press and did our job. So we're here to report that to you. But I know some of the comments are like, why would you even be talking about it? When you get invited to this and you do this kind of broadcast, we need to make sure we're there. Okay, that's just the truth. Let's go to Bill, who's calling in Wyoming on line one. Bill, you're on the air.
Hey, Logan. Thanks for taking my call. I'm still laughing about your review of last night. And I just started thinking, if this happens, what would have been interesting with just Trump and Biden would be interesting. But with RFK, I think that would be really entertaining. And it forms a question. Do you think this will bounce on President Biden, kind of like what Ross Perot did with him trying to be elected?
That definitely seems to be the conversation that is happening. And it's even happening at that RFK event, is would he be, and, you know, they'll throw out jokes about spoilers. Will he be the spoiler candidate that comes in and could cause confusion amongst voters to decide who to vote for? Again, I think it's going to depend. You know, he said he's drawing from 50-50.
Well,
and
the
I feel like we saw that.
The New York Times poll said that when he was included in their polling, that it was about 10% polling, 5% really took away from Biden and Trump. I feel like obviously we're in Tennessee, so there it probably skewed a little bit more towards a person you would think, if you weren't here supporting him, you may be a Trump voter.
Yeah, we're in a deep red state.
Right, but that also being said, it did feel like it was a very interesting crowd, because it felt like there was a lot of guys that just got done playing golf, and also you're more like hippie looking, more
Nashville,
California, Nashville,
hipster.
Rebellious hipster, or even like NPR listener. Like, it felt like you had the environmentalist, which is his background there as well, but also the more independent minded young professional. And so it was an interesting crowd in that manner, but they definitely targeted most of their ilk from the stage, and the biggest applauses and laughters were the jokes against Biden.
Yeah, or Democrats, right. Or leaving the Democratic Party, or right. That the Democrat Party left them. Now, I do think that a lot of people are there considering voting for me, and even some of these comedians that I followed, these are guys, and some of them that I know, these are guys that probably would have voted for a President Trump, but they don't necessarily feel fully comfortable with it, maybe because of some of the decisions in the last few years of his presidency. That they think this is their third party option. Now, everyone knows in that room, the pathway to success for RFK Jr. is low, if not next to impossible, to actually secure the White House. So there's that whole weird mix where you're in a room packed with a few thousand people that all know almost like what they're not saying out loud, which is they're voting for someone to not vote for another person, whether that be Trump or Biden. I think more of them had problems with Biden. But maybe that means they would have been a Trump supporter. I'm not sure. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. I want to take your phone calls coming up, because in the next segment, we're going to be joined by Ben Sisney, one of our ACLJ attorneys, to really talk about what we're doing and getting involved. We are filing right now a complaint to Columbia University in the city of New York about the what we believe is unfair targeting of Jewish students on these college campuses. We're also going to talk a little more about the FBI whistleblowers. I know you've heard us talk about that pretty recently. We actually have an update in that. So you're going to want to stay tuned. But we are right now obviously dealing with so many issues. I mean, how many could we cover here today? I feel like we've covered a dozen already. So we need your support. Become an ACLJ champion, as I said. That's what I'm trying to ask you to do today. Become a monthly recurring donor. But there's another thing I need you to do. It has nothing to do with donating. Tomorrow's show, we are going to be taking a lot of your questions that come in, not on phones, but on social media. YouTube, Rumble, Facebook. I'm looking at you. I'm not looking at you right now because it's graphic. Now I'm looking at you. Put in the comments a question for tomorrow. Start it with all caps Friday. That makes it easy search for our social media team to then pull these questions. And we're going to take as many of those as we can on tomorrow's broadcast. So do that right now for me. I'd appreciate it. We're going to try something new. Open it up a little bit to all of you, the thousands of you that watch online every day. We'll be right back. some phone lines open right now. And after this segment, I'm going to take all the calls I can. So give me a call right now at 1-800-684-3110. And you may be influenced by what you're about to hear. We are now joined by Senior Counsel for Litigation and Public Policy at the ACLJ, Ben Cisney. Ben, I want you to walk through. I just got this letter Will just presented me here. I have it right here about what we are currently doing in the situation involving Columbia University and obviously these protests and the lack of security for Jewish students on campus.
Absolutely. Thank you, Logan. I just want to point out you were spot on a while ago when you said that we're busy. This is an incredibly busy time. The attacks are constant. It's classrooms, it's courtrooms. It's all across the country, state and federal, and we're engaging everything, and every case is important. There's no case that's too small. There's some big ones going on right now, and we're going to hit some of those with what's going on at Columbia University in New York. So last night, we filed an administrative complaint with the U.S. Department of Education, sent a copy to their New York office as well, want to prevent them saying, oh, we didn't get it, the other one got it. So they both got it. And I'm expecting a response from them relatively promptly. I mean, the statute says they shall respond promptly. So we'll see what promptly means. But this is a procedure we can use because we're equipped and we qualify to file this kind of a complaint. We don't represent a student up there, at least not yet. I would love to, by the way. But this is a complaint process we can utilize even without a client to speak up on behalf of the groups of students. I'll tell you, I've talked to some students and their parents who've been impacted by these. They're not protests, they're riots, really. And many of them are just terrified to come forward to be a plaintiff. And I understand that. I mean, that's a tough decision. But working under these scenarios with this kind of threats and fear that these sort of riots and the complicit university employees and professors create for these Jewish students is creating an unsafe environment. And there's Title VI of the Federal Discrimination Code deals with that, and it prohibits universities, in this case, who receive federal money, that's an important hook, from allowing basically an environment that makes a student feel unsafe because of several qualifications. In this case, the relevant one is race or ethnicity. They have obligations, and in our view, they're not meeting them. So we took action.
Ben, you know, as we've talked about these encampments, as they call them, pro-Hamas rallies, as others call them, on campus, and we've talked about it, one of the major themes we've seen from the viewers of the show is, what can we do about it? And I think it's important to highlight for the audience, this is what ACLJ attorneys do every day, is they find a way that we can get involved and affect change. And it sometimes takes a minute to really get creative, use the resources we have, use the law, and find a way for us to engage to affect that change. As you mentioned, for many people, filing a lawsuit against a university may not be their first choice because they're already afraid for their safety. And then if they're a plaintiff in a federal court case, then that just highlights the individual even more so than they already felt targeted maybe on their campus. But our attorneys were able to use the law, use our expertise in these areas, and to find a novel way for us to address the issue and hopefully represent, one, the members of the ACLJ, but also represent the students on campus, even if not directly, by filing such a complaint as this.
Yeah, that's right. And we find, and you all know full well that we are constantly looking for avenues, even when the mainstream or sort of the establishment or conventional wisdom, courses of action don't fit for a particular reason. We find, and I love this about our team, we find that if you just dig in and if you just look, if you put the time and the effort in, which we get to do thanks to our supporters, but if you're willing to look deeper, there oftentimes, way more often than not, there's something you can do. And that something, even if it seems small at first, often snowballs and leads to something bigger, something more impactful. Filing this complaint, for example, may lead to one of our listeners or a friend or a relative of one of our listeners giving us a call. That would be fantastic. But you got to be able to take the action, but be willing to to look beneath the surface. And that's what we did here.
I want to move on from that. Look, I think a lot of people react that way. By the way, if you are one of those family members or you are that person who feels like they're being targeted, all you have to do is go to aclj.org/help. Fill out a very simple form at aclj.org/help and you get connected with a lawyer at no cost. And we do that. We could do it and offer it for you and for anyone else at no cost because of our incredible supporters and champions. People that give one-time donations, which are the majority, by the way, and are greatly appreciated. And then the 20,000+ people that give on a monthly recurring basis. And I would love to see that number continue to grow, because as that number grows, we can bring in more attorneys. We can create more media content around these topics that really need it. And they need, people need to hear this stuff, and they don't hear it without you and without your support. So again, I want to do that. Now, Ben, a topic that I know, especially for our Rumble viewers, I'll say that, that gets a lot of attention. We haven't talked about it in a little while because we now have an update, though, in the whistleblower situation and how we're also taking action there. Maybe give a little setup to what we're talking about and then lead into what we're doing.
Okay, absolutely. So, as you know, we represent two whistleblowers currently, and they're both in different procedural postures. I'm going to stay out of the weeds on it, but sure. One is on appeal in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit here in Washington. And briefing is underway, and we're expecting to have an oral argument sometime in the next few months. It's a very important case challenging an old rule that's preventing whistleblowers, the FBI, from getting any kind of judicial review, any kind of somebody making sure that their due process rights were honored. It's kind of a similar situation with our other client, Marcus Allen. The one in court is Garrett O'Boyle, both of whom have made headlines over the last year.
Seen them on
the show. Rightfully so. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, and so that's the setup. Just recently, the Department of Justice OIG, Office of Inspector General, just issued a memo, a report with some recommendations and some observations. And while it is softer than it needs to be, there is plenty more to be done, it is a very important step for us in highlighting, and it confirms from the OIG, the DOJ's own Office of Inspector General, that the Department of Justice components, including the FBI, have not been following the law. They've been violating the statute. One of the excuses, if you look in a footnote, is because, well, we stopped doing that during COVID. I'm sorry, you're the FBI.
You don't have that ability. Yep.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't so serious. And so, but they're not giving, separate from the court or the judicial route for review, they've been denying these whistleblowers the opportunity for internal review, basically really blocking them from even filing an internal complaint with the DOJ OIG, the Inspector General. And the Inspector General's office says that violating the statute. And I said, I'm not going to go into weeds, but I mean, this is complex stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of rules and statutes and presidential directives and orders that apply here, and it's all interconnected, and we're working through it. And we've got a lot more work to do, but this is a big, big step.
Absolutely. And look, get in the weeds. It's okay. There's people who watch and listen to this show. I know who you are. You're the people that like to get in the weeds a bit. So it's okay. We have people like Ben on, or we had Christy on earlier this week. We've obviously have Harry Hutchinson, the CC Howell, an incredible ACLJ team, my brother, the entire ACLJ team that comes on here and gives you great legal analysis. And then me and Will, but me, because Will's got a master's in journalism and all that, I can come on and ask those questions for you. But tomorrow's show, Friday, we are going to be taking a lot of your questions. So I'm once again going to ask you, if you have a question, you just heard about all that whistleblower situation. You heard about what happened earlier on. We talked about the RFK situation and the debates. Maybe you have a political question. Maybe you have one about our ACLJ work for the Jewish students, or maybe our ACLJ work in general. I want to hear from you. So all you have to do in the comments is start the comment with Friday in big all caps. And then tomorrow's show, I'm going to take as many of those comments as we can. So make sure you join us tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun to go through your comments and discuss what's going on currently. Right now, at the ACLJ, we are in a lot of legal fights. You just heard from Ben Cisney again in Washington, D.C. We have teams in Europe. My brother's going to be there coming up. He's traveling into Europe. That all is happening as we speak. So while you may hear this 1 hour of broadcast, you got to understand the complexity that is happening outside of these walls right here. Though I love this show, and I think this show, you know, this is why I'm here for you. There's so much work happening at the ACLJ, and we could use your support. So go to aclj.org/champions, become a monthly supporter. Do it right now. That is at any level. $5, $500, $5,000. I don't care what it is. All I care is that you get engaged. Be a champion of life, liberty, and freedom. Be a part of the ACLJ today. We are going to take phone calls, and guess what? I'll be honest with you. I need some right now. I need your... You've been too busy doing these Friday comments that I haven't been able to get some phone calls. So give me a call. 1-800-684-3110. Let's talk RFK. Let's talk the debates. Let's talk about the situations we've been doing with the Jewish students in the ACLJ. There's so much, or whatever's on your mind, give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. Back to Seculo. I want to take your phone calls, but right now I don't got any. So give me a call. 1-800-684-3110. You got no questions? I see a ton of questions coming in for Friday, which I'm excited about. That's going to be a fun show.
That's a little
We've never
your
done
fault,
this.
Logan. You put a lot of emphasis on the Friday questions, and people, they enjoy that. They clearly are enjoying that, but they decided not to call you today.
It's a lot less stressful to put a comment in. I understand that, than to go on a broadcast and have your voice heard by millions of people. No pressure. But I do like to hear from you. I like to hear the tone in your voice, how you're feeling, what you feel about all of these movements that are happening. Again, we discussed at the beginning of this show. We've talked so many topics today. The media lying. Will and I note I've noticed media lying obviously for years. I've been talking about the reform we need to have in the media and that we need to be really looking at options outside of legacy media. It's why we're on Rumble. It's even why we're on YouTube. Look, because you know what? There's no one right now. They may strike us. They may take you down later. There's no one right now. From me to you, there is no one above or below. It is just us without any gatekeepers getting you the content that we think is important, and we don't lie to you. You know, that's one of the things that I love about this broadcast. I'll tell you the truth. We told you. We got media invites to that RFK event. Did we pull any punches? No. We told you the good and the bad. The difference is the media will lie to you. The media said here locally that he no-showed and that Russell Brand didn't get on a plane. Russell Brand was there. He showed up late. Why did he show up late? Because at the beginning of the night, the PR people came out and said, not even the host came out and said, we need to say a prayer for his nephew, who's currently in a very, very serious medical situation. Let's all take a moment and say a prayer for him. And the media decided that that moment, a moment of genuine sincerity, would be used against them to say, he's late, he no-showed. Did I want to be there at 11 o'clock at night waiting for him to come up? And was I thrilled with the content of what he said? No. Did I stick it out though? Yeah, because they were honest up front. But the media decides to lie. His whole event showcased how the media has lied about his campaign. And then I saw it firsthand. That is why we have this show. To expose the truth, because there is no one. There is no one, no other corporate head above us saying you have to say or not say this or to pull some narrative from one side of the aisle. We can be honest with you. I saw it firsthand. Do we love all the content that came out of that event last night? No, we gave you our analysis on it. Do I think there are people who were very unfair to him, very unfair to the situation, and treated it like the media liars that they are? Yeah, we saw it firsthand. We called it out. Let's go ahead. Phone lines have lit up. Thank you. Took you long enough. No, I'm kidding. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls. Let's go to Inga in New Jersey. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. My question is, with the debate, is there any way to make sure and prove Biden doesn't have an earpiece? He doesn't want an audience, and he wants the mic muted to make sure he hears. Is there any way we can get that in writing? He won't be wearing an earpiece with someone to whisper to tell him what to say.
They do negotiate out what right. A lot of the terms are. So they're, you know, I don't know if there's a pat down situation, like if you're in a UFC fight where they're like checking your shorts, but maybe there should be something like that. Now, a lot of the times they're wearing especially with the audience, they're wearing protective gear, bulletproof vests, those very normal. So you have to kind of work around a lot of these situations because from a security situation, it feels scary. Look, I felt that way at the RFK event yesterday. Sure, there was security and they were very known, but you don't sit there and not feel a little vulnerable. So there's those moments. But when it comes to an earpiece, I think the more likelihood of something like that is that the questions get to the administration or to the campaign, before the night.
Well, we knew this happened with the network at hand, CNN, back with Hillary Clinton, where Donna Brazil happened to get the copy of the questions and feed it to her friend Hillary Clinton. So, yes, that's also a very real possibility of things that have happened before, especially when you're dealing with media organizations, as we've been hounding on all day long, that aren't so truthful or maybe have an agenda. And there was a question on Rumble that asked why CNN, referring to the host of the debate. That was something that the Biden administration proposed of who could host it. They said it would need to be a news organization that had a debate both for the Republican primary in 2016 and had a debate for the Democrat primary in 2020. So therefore, there would be able to say, like, look, both parties have participated in a debate hosted by this. Therefore, you should be okay with it. CNN happened to fit that criteria. And we're very quick on the draw to offer a debate. They already had that ready.
They did announce their moderators, I believe.
Oh, have they? I didn't see that yet. Yeah.
I believe it's Jake Tapper and Dana Bash.
I would have guessed it would have been those two, mainly because Jake Tapper is really the only star left.
That may just be what they've said, like the rumors, but I believe it was announced, but you can find out. Don't quote me on that. Let's go ahead and take some more calls.
You are correct. Daily Beast. So the highest source in news says that they revealed
their... Don't say that name here. I don't even want to hear it.
Their debate moderators are Dana Bash and... Jake Tapper, obviously Jake Tapper, their lead anchor, Dana Bash.
But Trump called the bluff. They said CNN, ABC, and he said, fine, game on. Let's go to continue on the calls. Donna in Colorado, you're on the air very quickly.
Hey, I just want to find out, thanks for taking my call, with this ridiculous gag order on Trump, is this going to affect his debate?
I mean, it's the law. They very, very well could, but are there loopholes here?
Well, here's part of
they think it may be over.
Part of the thing is that they said the trial should be over in New York by the time the debate happens at the end of June. And as we know, the prosecution is expected to rest their case today, actually. Mm-hmm. So then typically the defense side, when they call witnesses, it's not as long. So you can expect that that trial will be wrapped up probably in the next few weeks, depending on how long the defense and then the jury take on it.
And we've got about a month until the debate.
Right. So in theory, that gag order would no longer be in effect because that is just governing during the trial.
Okay, continuing on. Let's keep going. Ann in Kentucky, line 4. You're up.
Hi there. I would just like to know, when our president is reinstated again, will he be able to correct the situation with the FBI whistleblowers?
In theory, yes.
Right, and the attorney general would have whoever is put in place.
You gotta
as the
have
next
people
attorney
with guts.
General. Right, they need to get in there and clean house. We know that it's been a cesspool at the FBI, but hopefully it's something that could be remedied and maybe even fix the broken process a little bit as well with the next attorney general and hopefully a new FBI director as well.
So pick the right people. If you get put in that position, President Trump, pick the right people. Do the job people want you to do. Tiana's calling in California. Last call of the day. Go ahead.
I have to say, I just love you guys.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you guys for almost 20 years now, since the early 20s when I was when you guys were fighting for Terri Schiavo.
Sure.
You guys do amazing work. How you fight for even the smaller matters you're fighting for are religious freedoms, unborn babies, I mean, keeping us well informed, fighting for Israel. I just appreciate all the truth that you guys give and all the blessings that you guys give to this world. And I just love you guys.
Tiana, that really warms our heart. I mean that from a genuine place, to hear from people like you who have been with us for so long. We've been in this fight for a very long time. This organization has withstood for so many decades and will continue on to the future because of people like you, Tiana, who call in, even from states like California. You may hear that and go, I can't believe we have some of our strongest base is in Southern California, because they know what's going on and they see what's happening. So again, I don't know where Tiana is in California specifically, but know there are people all around the country and all around the world, including in our European offices, I said, that my brother will be traveling to very shortly. All of it is happening with your support. Go to aclj.org to support the work right now. I did want to encourage you, last second, we're going to take all those comments tomorrow. This is the last chance. Put Friday, the beginning of your comment, right now, and ask me a question. And I'm going to answer those. Will and I are going to answer them on tomorrow's show. Really special one. We're going to have a lot of fun. Do that right now.